From WHQR Public Media, this is The Newsroom. I'm Ben Schachman. Thanks for listening to this special edition for the 2025 Wilmington City Council election. This year, there are three open seats on council, and we have eight candidates, including six challengers and two incumbents. We also have three candidates for mayor, including our incumbent mayor. While the city council race is technically nonpartisan, the local Democratic and Republican parties do play a role in supporting candidates. And for city council, we have three Republican candidates, one unaffiliated candidate, and four Democratic candidates, although the county Democratic Party implemented a straw poll to narrow its support to just three of those candidates and one of the two Democrats running for mayor. And we'll have information on all of that on our show page. On today's show, we're interviewing Democratic incumbent Bill Saffo, Wilmington's longest-serving mayor, who is running for re-election. We'll ask him a host of questions drawn from listeners and readers and our community agenda program. We'll also ask what he would continue to do with the office of mayor, above and beyond what a city council member could do. All right, well, Bill Saffo, incumbent mayor and candidate for re-election, thank you very much for being here today.
Thank you, Ben, for having me.
So, this almost seems like a silly question, but I'm asking all the candidates, I'm going to ask you too, for people who may not know you, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, my name is Bill Saffo. I was born and raised right here in Wilmington, North Carolina. I went to school here, went to university here, and ended up working here. And this is my hometown. I've always loved it. Never wanted to really go anywhere else. I've traveled a lot in my life, but this is the place I've always called home and the place that I love. And I've been honored to be elected to a municipal election in 2003 as a council member. And then, of course, subsequently, when I ran for mayor in 07, and every 2 years thereafter, I have run for mayor of the city of Wilmington and have been honored by the citizens of this community to give me the honor to be elected as mayor and to help run this community in this city.
So we're asking all the candidates this won't be a super difficult question, but we are asking, you know, because this is technically a nonpartisan
correct
race. We're asking everyone, you know, if you are affiliated with a party, which party and why?
Well, I've always, since the day I registered in 1976 or 77, I registered as a Democrat and have been a Democrat ever since. And so that's my party affiliation.
All right. So let's get into the policy.
Okay.
This is top of the list every time we go out into the community mm-hmm. and ask people about what's on their mind, and that's affordable housing.
Mm-hmm.
So you have watched a lot of initiatives, seen some partnerships come and go. So with that perspective, you know, where do you think the city should go next? Do you think there are things the city should try differently, things they should double down on? What are your thoughts on that?
I think that with the announcement from the county that they are going to, you know, walk away from the board that we created together to look at affordability, I think that we need to continue to move in a direction, into the direction of what can we do as a community, as a city, to continue to support affordable housing. I think it's an important issue not only for the people that want to reside here and stay here and that have lived here all their lives, but it's also a very important economic development tool also, because when companies are looking to locate here, they're looking at what our average price home is, and right now it's over $400,000+. That's going to translate into what they're going to pay in salaries. So it's also a very important economic development tool. I think that we as a city have done a pretty good job in the last 5 years, spending over $23 million. It's translated into 866 units, I believe, of affordable housing, and that runs a mixture of single-family to multifamily housing. Some of it is done by the private sector. Some is done in conjunction with the state as well as the county, what we did with Starway Theater of 278 units of affordable housing. Some of it has to do with the unsheltered, like we're doing with the Sparrow there off Carolina Beach Road, with supportive housing, with wraparound services. So I think we've had some pretty significant success in the last couple of years in bringing more affordability into the marketplace. That's one part of it. The other part of it is, based on the studies that we've done, we've got a long way to go. And I've said this very openly to a lot of people. The city's got probably about 1,000 acres, a little bit more, a little bit less, of raw land left in the city of Wilmington. Geographically, we're a very small part of the community. Although everybody has a Wilmington address, the 52 square miles that I represent is from the Cape Fear River to the Intercoastal Waterway from about 17th Street to the MLK Parkway. That's the city of Wilmington. So geographically, you know, that's the area that we're going to be working in and looking for ways to put more affordable housing. Now, we've done some of that working through our land development code by giving density bonuses to developers that will bring us affordability. Most of the developments that are coming to us today, most developers are putting a percentage of their development into affordability because they know that we as a council, it's one of our top priorities, and we've had a good working relationship in that respect. The other one is that we'll be working with the Wilmington Housing Authority in respect to some of the redevelopment of their old properties. I think Hillcrest is one, 241 units on 24 acres. There's a significant redevelopment plan for that particular development and project of possibly moving that from 241 units to about over 600 units with some wraparound services in regards, and as well as some commercial space on the bottom part. That would be 30%, 60%, 80% AMI, as well as market rate rents also. So a mixture of incomes that would be part of that. I know that they also have purchased an old tax credit development there at Gervais that would translate into about 89 additional units with some raw land there. But we're also working with them in the opportunity that they can give us in regards to adding some density there, I think would be good. I think bringing in additional units through ADRs, garage apartments, if you will, that when we change the land development code, giving the private sector, private individual citizens the opportunity to put granny, mother-in-law suites or whatever they want to call them in their backyard has also translated in a number of units that have come online. So we're doing everything that we possibly can. And I think that we should also look for ways that maybe we could possibly partner with the university. You know, the universities are one of the big drivers of population too, because if they're growing from about 300 to 400 people a year, and I think they house about 35% of their student body on campus. They have right now, I think they're going to go this year, over 19,000 students. You know, they're going to be looking for the private sector to pick up a lot of that cost moving forward, or cost or the development of units for moving forward if they want to grow as a university. I don't know how much of that they're going to put on their campus, but they're going to need some of that private sector to work with them. So I think there's some opportunities out there. And I also think that the Wilmington Housing Authority needs to be part of this, because they also give vouchers out to people that may not only live in the city, they also may live in the unincorporated areas in the county. So I think they need to be part of a new strategic plan of folks working together on how do we get more housing in place, and looking at some maybe of our development codes to maybe where we think that we can put some additional density, really look and focus a lot of attention in those particular areas, especially maybe around more commercialized areas that may be redeveloped, that we think there may be some opportunities moving forward.
Well, that was going to be one of my follow-up questions, is that this is an issue we hear all the time. Experts tell us that getting more units across the spectrum of cost is a good way to drive down costs. You know, even if it's more luxury apartments, that means those people aren't going further down in the market.
Correct.
And makes sense on paper. Mm-hmm. And then you've seen this, obviously. Mm-hmm. Every time a larger multifamily apartment complex is proposed, we see significant or at least very loud pushback.
Yes, we do.
And so the struggle, I think, in any city around Wilmington size, kind of on that cusp of being, you know, the next tier up, is people's expectations are for a more rural, peaceful style of life, and then you've got all this growth. So, you know, where can that go so that you don't have pitchforks in front of City Hall?
Well, I think you're going to really have to start looking at some heights. I mean, and that's always also controversial also. I mean, 5 stories, 6 stories, 7 stories, can you go a little bit higher? Can you go more vertical than you can horizontal? And I think you're going to have to take a look at that. I think in some of these sites where, and I'll use it as an example, although I know that there's been some looks at possibly redeveloping, is the old Kmart site that sits right next to the university, a very underutilized site, a significant amount of open space there, just a big old parking lot with an old building that's basically dilapidated. I mean, there's an opportunity to really put some additional density. You got a bus line there. You got you can ride your bike through the university and get onto the Cross City Trail. I think that's one of the opportunities that we will have in the future about a redevelopment site that I think could do very well. I'm not saying that the mall is going to be redone, but at some point in time, that may be redone at some point in time. That's a pretty significant tract of land there up between Independence and Olander Drive, and any other commercial tracts like that that we think that we can put more mix of uses in there is going to be critically important to how we do this. Where we can put more of the density on more of the major thoroughfares, I think we're better off than we try to do when we go up against a neighborhood where the neighborhood has concerns about traffic, noise, height, and whatnot. But it's going to be a challenge because of just the limited amount of land that we have left. But I think one of the charges that we should give this new committee and give it do it within about a 6-month period is to come back to us with some really specific recommendations that we can look at from a land development code issue that maybe we can add additional units that we're not thinking about right now.
So the other question I want to ask, and we at least here in our newsroom think about this as a housing problem, mm-hmm. but it's sort of in the middle of a Venn diagram of housing and mental health and. And public safety, and that's homelessness. Mm-hmm. And we're talking about this off mics, mm-hmm. but I'm curious, you know, it has been very much an issue this week.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what are your thoughts on this? Where, you know, if it were up to you and not just one of seven, where would you take the city's policy on this?
Well, I think that the people that are, look, every part of the community has been impacted by this. I mean, I think we have found camps all over this community, and when a neighborhood calls us or a citizen calls us and says, I've got this going on in my backyard, we go out there and we break that camp up and we move them along, and they move, unfortunately, to another area of the community. Downtown has probably taken the brunt of that because there's a lot of service providers that are down in the downtown area, and so it's easy for people that are homeless to get services because it's closer by. But they have also have had a significant impact on a lot of the business people down here as well as the residents down here, and we hear it all the time. They have a right to ask about our camping ordinances, what are we allowing, what are we not allowing. I think what we saw last night from our city attorney, Meredith Earhart, is that we have a significant amount of ordinances that pretty much mirror a lot of what the county's ordinance is, except for the fact is in the county you cannot park a car and sleep in it if you're in a county parking lot. We allow that, or we don't have that ordinance in the city. I think what Councilman Waddell was trying to talk about too was camping. Just call it a camping ordinance and take all of the ordinances or all of the laws that we have in the book and just put them under one category so that when a police officer rolls up on a scene and there's an issue going on, they have it at their fingertips as to what they can and they can't do because the ordinance are in different locations. Maybe we can do that on a card where we can laminate it and give it to the officer that is addressing that particular issue. I think in both the people that are saying that we're criminalizing this and the people that are saying, please do something about it, they both deserve an answer. And what I did last night was to ask for just a break for 30 days so we could get some more additional information that we were talking about at the time with the county about having a joint committee, just to see the amount of money that we as a community, are spending on this particular issue, because it's just not Good Shepherd Ministry out there. It's a significant amount of folks out there that are dealing with a lot of different issues from substance abuse to alcoholism to mental health issues, all of the different players that are involved, the hospital, the Trillium, the jail, the county jail. I mean, when we take somebody there with a Class 3 misdemeanor that may do something that's kind of crazy and we take them to the jail, what does the process look like there? How long do they stay in jail in a Class 3? It doesn't seem, from what we heard last night, for a long period of time. So then where do we put them after that? If we have somebody out here on the street with a schizophrenic episode and they're off their meds or they don't have medicine, where do we take them? How long do we take an officer off of the street? How many times have we taken that same person to the hospital? And how many resources are they eating? That was one of the goals and objectives that I was trying to do with the council and with the commissioners, just to see what we are spending and are we spending the money in the right places. I think one of the things that we talked about was the possibility of bringing in a day shelter of some sort, and then where would you put that day shelter? Because wherever you put it, you're going to get some blowback from somebody in the community and say, I don't want it in my backyard. And then the other part of it was some kind of a mental health facility for those people that we can't get into one of the mental health facilities here like the Oaks, or if we had to take them up to Cherry Hill. There's really no room at the inn. I mean, the mental health crisis in this country is real. It's the system is decimated. It's overwhelmed. But we're having to deal with it on the streets, and our police officers are having to deal with it. Our citizens are having to deal with it. But we have to do something about it because we can't just let somebody out there just yell and scream. So part of this is let's see what it looks like. What do we have out there? What can we do as a community, as a city, maybe as a county, maybe working together with some sort of a sheltering process that we can at least say to people, here's a place we can take you or help you get there. We don't want to take you to jail. That's the last place we want to take you because the sheriff is going to tell you, I want to keep people in jail that are committing serious crimes. I don't have room in here for people that have mental health issues. So what can we do to expedite some of the issues that we're dealing with on one side? And on the other side, give these people down here a voice and to tell them that we've got some help on the way and that we need to enforce the policies that we currently have on the books. I mean, there are laws there in place right now that we can do a lot of these things and take some of these folks off of the street. Maybe that wasn't being done in the past, but I can assure you, based on what I've had, my conversations I've had with the interim chief, with the city manager, they're taking a much more aggressive position in making certain that when we have somebody out there that's doing something crazy, that we've got to get them off the street or ask them to move or go somewhere else.
I would just also note that you've got to get prosecutors on board.
That's correct.
I hear
too.
This from police officers all the time that they think, gosh, if I make this arrest, are they even going to do anything?
Attempt to do so. And that's the other part of this is the judicial side of it, because we can arrest them. We can put them in the jail. The sheriff is going to do their part. Then they got to go over to the courtroom, and then the court's going to make their decision there. And what is the judge going to do? And where are they going to rule on? How they're going to rule on First Amendment rights and all the different rights that somebody might have, and do they have the evidence to prove the case? There's a litany of different things that go into it. It's a very complex and complicated issue. It's not only here in Wilmington. It's all over the country. I think if somebody had a model right now that we could all gravitate to, we would have. We would have already taken care of this. But this is going to be an ongoing issue. I think the best that we can do is try to manage it and see what we can do to try to help get these people off the street and get them into supportive housing or some sort of supportive services as quickly as we can. But mind you, and the other thing I think that Chief Evangel was very clear about yesterday, you can't force somebody to go get help. Whether you're an alcoholic, whether you're in drugs, whatever the case may be, you can't force somebody to do that. You do still have rights in this country, and if you don't want to do it, then you don't have to go. But that's not to say that you can be disruptive and destroy property and hurt people's businesses and do the things that we have seen in the past either. I think that we have to take some sort of a line. It's like driving a car. You can drive a car. You can get a driver's license, but that doesn't mean you can speed all over town doing 100 miles an hour. You can go out and have a drink. It doesn't mean you can get so drunk that you're going to fall down on the street and be publicly intoxicated. You have opportunity to do different things in this country. True, you can sit on a bench, but you have there's certain rights and responsibilities as a citizen that you have to adhere to also. So I think that we have to follow the law and adhere to the law and then enforce it also. I think there's a carrot and there's a stick here. We don't want to use the stick unless we have to. I think we also have to identify what are the resources that are out there and what we can do about it. But I will tell you, on the mental health component, the mental health side, it's a big part of it. And look, most of these folks that I've seen or I've talked to myself seem to be pretty decent people. You know, some of them down in the luck or whatever the case may be. But you have a group of them, a group of people out there that, you know, whether they're mentally not well or they just don't care, that create a tremendous amount of disruption here.
So some of these solutions will take money, and you mentioned this during the city council meeting this week, so I want to touch on it, not just because of homelessness, but because there are a lot of city initiatives that, you know, are looking around for different ways to be funded, and that is the endowment.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems, at least from my reporting, the county has a pretty direct line to the endowment. I mean, look at their decision to cut nonprofit funding this year, $1.6 million. The endowment stepped in, I think it took about a week. That's a pretty quick turnaround on $1.6 million. I can't speak for you guys, but it doesn't seem like you guys have that hotline.
Well, you know, now look at the endowment as kind of a county-centric board. I mean, they created it when they sold the hospital. You know, it's had its issues. I think it's been very well reported. I think, you know, depending on who the new director is going to be and the new direction of the board in the group, we're waiting to see. I think there's a tremendous of an opportunity for this community if it's done right. I think there's a significant amount of needs out there. The city has needs. The county has needs. We have needs in public health. We have needs in public space and in fixing things and doing things that I think that would benefit the entire community from a public health point of view. I think we've got plenty of plans. I think both city and county have tremendous amount of plans that we've formulated over the years as to where we could spend money, I think, collectively in working together. I'm just waiting to see who the new executive director is going to be and what the direction of this board is going to be. The interesting thing about the endowment is everybody that I talk to, when you get into a public meeting about things that cost money, everybody's talking about, let's go to the endowment, let's go to the endowment, let's go to the endowment. I think the sooner that the endowment comes out as to what their goals and objectives and where they're going to be spending their money and where they're going to be focusing their time on these transformational projects, the better off we're all going to be as a community. So at least we know what the rules of engagement are so that when we as a city have a project or something that we may need some help on, we could go to the endowment with this that would fit within hopefully their scope of work and plan. And possibly if we could work with the county on some joint things that we've done in the past, like parks and some of the initiatives that we've done in the past, maybe there'll be some opportunities there.
I can tell you, I heard from a lot of people who kind of sort of thought they knew what the parameters, what the rules of engagement were. And then that aquarium grant came out, $7 million for the aquarium, which is going to be awesome.
Yeah, sure.
Don't get me wrong. I love the otters.
Sure.
But I think that spun some people's heads a little bit, saying like, well, okay, what else is on the table? You know, so I think that fed the fire that you're talking about.
Well, I think also the endowment and just in some of the conversations that I've had with some of the members and also with the past executive director, I think they will be looking from a city point of view and even from a county point of view, but I think from any point of view is what kind of skin are you going to put into this thing? How much money are you as a community, as a city, as a group, as a nonprofit, how much money are you going to put into it? We'll help you, but we want to see some, as they say, proverbial skin in the game.
Yeah.
And I think that if you can demonstrate that, I think you have a much better chance of getting funding for some of the projects that we may be looking at in the future.
Yeah, the former CEO, Dan Winslow, did say to me repeatedly mm-hmm. that, you know, we want to be last dollars. We don't want to be first.
Exactly. And that was the same thing that I heard from him. And I also heard it from other members yeah. that are on that endowment board that have shared the same information with me.
So one other question about development, and that is, you know, we hear from folks all the time about green space, and take that as you will. But, I mean, mm-hmm. that can be, you know, cutting down trees for development. That could just be the tree canopy in downtown. Mm-hmm. I think mm-hmm. public parks, people think about that a lot of different ways. Mm-hmm. What's your point of view on how Wilmington is handling green space?
Well, I think we need more green space, and I think that we as a community should have bought a lot of this property when it was a lot cheaper, and we did not. I think that what we've been able to accomplish, even with the county, with the Olson Park of 90-some acres, what we've been able to do with Halliburton, what the county's going to do with the Fossey Bryan Tract there off of Independence, and I've also said that because it's within the incorporated city limits, it'd be nice for us as a city to work with the county to be part of that mission, because I think it's important that when something like that happens, we should. But I think that we should look for more opportunities to preserve more green space. I've gone through two parks bonds, and we've preserved some. We've done some improvements to different parks over the years. But I think as a community, as we are growing, as the region has grown, we need more open space because there's demand for it. I think it's going to be challenging unless governments can come together, like city and county governments, that can make some of this stuff happen. And I'm always open when there's an opportunity, whether it's in the city or the county, like we did with Olson, even though it's in the unincorporated areas, I think it's a great park that serves a lot of people. And we as a city manage it. We have a park at Echo Farms where part of that was going to be redeveloped. We took a portion of that, saved and preserved it for some park space and open space and a trail there. And the county runs it. I don't care who runs it, but I think that there's an opportunity for both of us both entities, governmental entities, to come together to preserve some open space. And maybe that's where the endowment could come in and be part of this also, if it's a city-county initiative. Absolutely. I think the trails are important, Ben. I don't think a lot of people understand or hurt, you know, maybe we haven't been keeping up, but we've had a lot of people in the last 2 years be killed, pedestrians that have been killed in this community. One of the goals and the objectives of the trails would get to get people off the street and get them onto the trails and walking and using the trail and using the outdoors. I think after 2008, when the Obama stimulus plan came out, I think we put in about 15 miles of trail. We had shovel-ready projects, and then we went out with a transportation bond and 2014 to $54 million, of which $20 million was for trails. So people love it, and I think there's an opportunity to connect the trails even in the unincorporated areas, working with the county. You see the trail systems that they're building down at Carolina Beach and at Wrightsville Beach. And just, I think people are going to use those trails more and more as more and more people move here. And we see the traffic that comes in here on a daily basis, especially in the summer months, that just try to get on the beaches. Carolina, Curie Beach, Wrightsville Beach, I mean, it's 40 minutes to get onto the beach. And a lot of people now are using the trails, riding their bikes over to get onto the beach. I think that the trail system is being used a lot more than it used to. I think one of the issues that we're going to be dealing with in the near future is going to be these e-bikes that are doing over 30 miles an hour.
Yes.
And I've heard from citizens of the community that say, I've been walking my dog or I'm jogging and I see an e-bike comes by me and is doing over 30 miles an hour. So that's something we're going to probably have to talk about. But people are using it, and that's a good thing to see.
So you mentioned earlier economic development. So I want to dig on that just a little bit more. Over the years, we've seen some direct – city and or county investments, incentives like PVD or Live Oak, and then other things that are sort of more of a soft hand, where the city is acting as sort of a facilitator, bringing people to the city and hopefully letting the city speak for itself, right? Mm-hmm. You come visit here. I've moved here twice, so I can see the appeal. So going forward, you've been a part of some of these in the past, but going forward, what would you like to see the city do with economic development?
Well, we've got Wilmington Business Development that I think in the last couple of years had some pretty significant success, especially with the Amazon development that's taking place up on 421 that's straddling Pender and New Hanover County. Eventually that center is going to have over 2,000 jobs, 3 million square feet, $1 billion worth of investment. It's significant. Or what we were able to do with GE, even though it was in the unincorporated areas, we as a city had invested in that incentive because we knew a lot of those citizens also work and, live in the city of Wilmington. I think that from an incentive point of view, I think on the per capita income, whatever that number is, we always look to see whatever job creation is has to at least reflect this is the minimum salary you're going to pay folks when you come into a community if you want an incentive from the city and the county. And we should never make that investment up front. We should always make it after they have made their investment and after the job has been created and to certify that. But you have to take a look at, first of all, we want good, clean industries here. I think one of the things that this community has been very clear about is we do not want polluters in this community. We saw what happened years ago with Titan Cement, and I think the community was very clear. I think the economic developers got their marching orders, don't bring us any of that kind of stuff again. I think looking for what I would say is high-tech manufacturing, what we see now in a lot of Corning with a lot of the robotics and stuff of that nature, I think is the thing of the future in regards to manufacturing. I think we're going to see a lot of warehousing that we've seen because of the port and what the port and the aggressiveness of the port and what they're doing in regards to trying to deepen the port, bringing more container traffic into the port and getting more products out of the state of North Carolina. So I think logistics is going to be a big part of economic development for it. Obviously, we love high tech. I mean, we love fintech. We've seen what happened with Encino. Live Oak Bank has been a tremendous partner with the city and has been a good corporate citizen to this community. I think they've got about 800 people now out there at their campus there at Tebarana with 4 buildings, and at some point in time, they'll hopefully build their 5th building out there. I think we've made some pretty good investments and have worked with some good companies that have located into this community. I think we also need to work better at incubation of small businesses that will hopefully grow into large businesses like PPD did, which is a success story that came out of over here at the Cotton Exchange. I think that we need to do a better job in that arena, because one of the things that those folks do lack is venture capital. And a lot of those folks, we may have great companies here in Wilmington or great ideas here in Wilmington that may be coming out of the university or just coming from individuals, but they have to go to Raleigh, Durham, Chapel Hill. Those areas have the fintech capital, and people are investing in that. Could we have a capital fund of some sort that could invest with companies or small companies that could create a lot of jobs in our community? Because most people that create the jobs that are to live here in the community want to live here and stay here and build their companies here. I think we need to do a better job than what we have done in the PAC. I know that we've done something with UNCW with their incubator there, but I think we can do a better job in that arena than we currently have. I think the other thing is the film industry. I think it's going to be challenging. I just saw Texas went pretty significant on their new incentive at 30%, and McConaughey
It's a bidding war, for
it's
sure.
A bidding war, and obviously Texas has got all money, and they've got a tremendous amount of money. Georgia's out there. They've invested a significant amount of money. I think we can make some tweaks to the film industry, to the grant that we currently have that could increase the volume of business. You know, we just have this brand-new studio at Dark Horse Stages that Kirk Engelbright built. It's a phenomenal studio, phenomenal facility. Mr. Beast has been out there filming and got to see some of that, and which was incredible to say the least. But, you know, we've made some pretty significant investments here, the private sector has, and we need to support them because they have generated a tremendous amount of revenue for businesses here as well as employing people here, and I think that's an opportunity there. I think what we've been able to do downtown, tourism has been just rock solid to the point where the Convention Center Advisory Board is telling us we need another 100,000 square feet. We're basically out of space. When we built it 800 to 1,000 for 800 to 1,000 people conventions.
And there were doubters.
And there were a lot of doubters went through three election cycles fighting that. But it happened. The hotels came. The businesses here, I knew that we were getting a lot of folks that were attacking us from other parts of the state, because I knew the people in Greensboro, Winston-Salem, and the interior part of the state said, if they go to Wilmington, they're not going to be coming here as much. And they were right about that. I know Asheville was trying to get a convention center at the same time we were, and they couldn't do it. And they still have an old facility there, and it's hindered them. But I think that we have an opportunity here to grow that convention center business down here. But our tourism business in general is just off the hook. A lot of people have found these area beaches. Topsail, Riceville, Carolina. I mean, they're all doing good. If you talk to any of the mayors in those particular areas, they'll tell you their beaches are packed. So we have that summertime crowd, but now we've become a destination that's year-round. It's not just the summer months. When I grew up here, after Labor Day, this place was dead as a doornail. You've got a place now that's got opportunity. You've got jobs here. You've got a 12-month season here of people that are coming here now all the time for a lot of different reasons. I think what Christina Haley in Wilmington Downtown has done for the Christmas has been phenomenal. I think it's one of the best light shows I've ever seen in my life down here, is how they've lit this place up. But I think there's a lot more opportunity there.
So I have to say, over the last, been here over 20 years, 20 years, not as long as you, but I've been here for a minute, and I've seen incredible economic growth here, a lot of success, a lot of affluence that hasn't been evenly achieved across the city.
Right.
I think there are definitely haves and have-nots.
Absolutely.
So I'm asking all the candidates this, what do you think, if anything, the city's role is in addressing that kind of economic inequality, and noting that here in Wilmington, that often looks like racial inequality?
I'm going to say this. My job as a mayor is to try to bring any job into the community that it's a good, hopefully a good paying job, but also a good job for any income level. I think it's just opportunity. I think we have a significant diploma divide in this country. I think some of the jobs that we bring in that are good high-tech jobs that are paying $100,000+ a year, you need a certain skill level, a certain skill set. Some of that may involve a four-year degree from a major university in something. Some of it may involve whatever we can do at the community college for a two-year degree or just short-term amount of training to get them up and going. And then you've got those that don't have a degree. And how do we get them to better paying jobs in a better position? Like that, to me, from what I have seen and what I've heard from folks that are bringing jobs in here, is going to be the biggest challenge, is these young people, is making certain that they're getting the proper education necessary to get good paying jobs in the future, and making certain that at the kindergarten level, and what Sparks Academy is doing with Kate Groden and the Cape Fear Collective, and what others have been trying to do, is to the academies and the all girls school, the Glow Academy, and trying to get these get these young people educated, is to focus a lot more on our education in this country and in this community. Because to me, at the end of the day, it's going to come down, a lot of it, on the good-paying jobs, education. And I think that we have a responsibility to play in that. It's not only to bring the jobs here, but also to talk about it as a community. What can we all do as citizens, as elected leaders, to from the nonprofit world to the after-school programs? What can we do what can the city do? What's its part in all of this, and how do we play into that? I think after-school programming is extremely important. What can we do with the facilities that we currently have? What can we do with the schools when they're closed during the summer? Can we use them for different types of programming? Jobs, the job program that Voyage has put that I've been very supportive of, the county has also over the years, in making certain that young people have an opportunity to get jobs in the summer that maybe have that are in the lower socioeconomic areas, and get them jobs, get them their minds thinking about getting a good job and what it takes to work and the disciplines necessary. You got to get up early in the morning. You got to show up for work. You got to do all these different things.
Oh, yeah.
You know, put in your 40 and do your thing. But at the end of the day, we have a responsibility to play in that as every government and as every group does.
So I want to pivot now and ask you about public safety. Mm-hmm. And a lot of this conversation has been about the Wilmington Police Department. If for no other reason that there's a new chief coming in, which for people will be an opportunity to, you know, reinvest in what they've been doing, pivot to a different policing style, or, you know, but it's just, there's been a lot of talk about that. But I also want to include the Wilmington Fire Department in this too. Mm-hmm. You know, so I'd like to see what you think about where Wilmington's public safety is right now and what you would like, you know, are there things you'd like to see them do more of, do less of?
Well, we'll take the fire department first. You know, we've rebuilt almost every station. We're about to build a new station out at River Lights. Those folks do a tremendous job day in and day out. I don't think a lot of people realize, but 95% of their calls are first responders right now to medical emergencies. 5% or less is fires. We've built a system around a fire apparatus, which is also important because we want to save your house, your car, whatever happens. But at the end of the day, we're showing up at those houses within 4 minutes, 30-some seconds. We have an ISO 1 rating, which is the top rating in the entire that you can get as a fire department. We're one of the very few agencies that have that. We as a community have made that investment into those facilities and into that apparatus to be able to do that. So from my perspective on the fire department, they have usually a 95% approval rating. Everybody loves the fire people. It's the only entity within the city government I've never gotten a complaint.
You watch like a group of them go through the grocery store, and it's like the parting of the Red Sea.
Everybody loves them,
yeah,
and they do a great job, and they're great people. I think it always comes down to pay with us with public safety. I personally, as an elected leader, have seen where we've made adjustments to pay, and then other area communities look at us to see what we're doing in our pay and raise it just a little bit more.
Everyone's doing it.
And everybody does it. They pick us off all the time. And I can't blame a person that's in public safety to say, I'm going to go here that I can get a little bit more money here or get a better package, a retirement package there. I cannot blame them for doing that. I think our goal and objective should be we should have the highest pay in the area. And I'll tell you why. Because of the amount of services and the amount of calls for service that we deliver on a day-in, day-out basis.
And I think what those men and women go through on those calls. I mean,
absolutely.
Some of these are the stories I have heard. I can't repeat on the air. They're tough. These are psychologically traumatizing experiences. I mean, they're not just showing up and sprinkling out like a campfire that went too far.
Challenging to say the least. I mean, the fire department. I mean, and the police department. How much Narcan has they put in to save people's lives? That are having overdoses. I mean, we've been in this crisis, this opioid crisis, for quite some time. And these men and women have saved a tremendous amount of lives and have helped a lot of people. They deserve the best pay. They are the busiest services, not only in the city, but in the entire region. If you're a police officer that worked for the city of Wilmington, they work. Because this is an area of, okay, we got 127,000 residents, but this place swells up to about 200,000 people during the day. You know, we have about 100-some thousand people that are coming into this community on a daily basis, including the citizens that are here. So they're dealing with people that are coming in here from all over. Mm-hmm. They're dealing with the craziest calls. They're dealing with nightlife. They're dealing with homelessness. They're dealing with dangerous people that are out there. They're doing their job. I think over 140,000 calls for service. So they are working, and they're working hard, and they deserve the top pay. One of the goals and objectives that I have is to try to make them the highest paid department in this area and to consistently be there. That's the number one delivery of services that a city has is public safety. So almost 50% of the general fund budget is public safety. It's an important part of what a city delivers, and we have to pay those men and women better than what we have. I've supported it last year with giving them the 5%. I made the adjustment again this year. We still need work to do, and we still have work to do. The city manager has made a commitment to me, and one of her objectives and goals is to get these people to the highest pay that we can as a city.
Any other things you would want to say or do differently or sort of reinforce about the police department side of things?
Well, obviously, we're going to have a new chief. We're going to hopefully make that announcement on August the 19th at our next city council meeting. Hopefully, that person will be in the audience, and so we can introduce them to the community. I think we went through a pretty significant process. I think there was over 45 candidates. They made application from all over the country. We had one of the top firms in the nation, PERF, that also helped us find Ralph Evangelist many, many years ago when I first came on to the city council. I think they did a magnificent job in bringing us some really good candidates. I think the council has some really good questions. I think PERF did a really good job in interviewing a lot of the police officers as to what their expectations and wants were. I think there was a clear understanding from those individuals that interviewed what this community wants. And I think even down to the finalists, all of the finalists that came that we interviewed, I think they were all very good qualified candidates. And I think people would be shocked at the amount, the different types of candidates and that came in from big departments, small departments, mid-sized departments. But it was a thorough evaluation of chiefs or folks that wanted this job from the West Coast to the East Coast. And it was very well done. So I think we've got us a pretty good chief coming. I think they know what they're to expect when they get here. But I also will tell you that I thought that one of the things that that I liked about this individual was that didn't come in here with preconceived notions as to this is the program I'm going to bring you. This is what I'm going to bring you. This is the style I'm going to bring you. I want to come in here and I want to evaluate it on my own, to see it in face to face on the ground, talking to these individuals before I make that decision as to which way we should go with this. I think that's a rational way to think about things, kind of like you taste your food before you salt it. And I like that concept of the way he was thinking about this, as to how do we work this, and what kind of a program do we need to bring in here that's going to make this an effective department? And the other thing that I liked about it was the fact that there was a lot of focus on the officers themselves, because these men and women have been working hard. I mean, real hard, and I appreciate all of their efforts.
All right, last policy question, and that is about public transportation.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't have to tell you. There's been ups and downs mm-hmm. for WAVE. Mm-hmm. General consensus is they're in a better position now than they have been over the last 4 or 5 mm-hmm. years. So I'm just curious, where would you like to see public transportation in Wilmington and beyond go next?
Well, I think it's a partnership. We created an authority but didn't give it any kind of revenue source, per se.
I noticed that.
And I think that it's very much like the school board in some respect. They create public policy, but they have to go to a public entity or public government to ask for the money to implement the policies that they have. I think it puts them at a disadvantage, and I think there's a disconnect sometimes with the citizens think, why can't they do more than what they do? I've been a big supporter of WAVE, have always supported it. I think the city supports it at about $1 million for a year. I think the county has also been part of that. I hope they continue with that because I think it plays an important role. I will tell you, I think they could play a tremendous role in the with the amount of people that we have moved into this community, that are moving into this community, with the density that we have. I think it would just make it a lot easier to be able to move people around if you had a good public transportation system. People would use it if it was efficient, and if it could get on them quickly, and you could get your head times down to about 10 to 15 minutes, and you could move them around. I think it could really solve a lot of the issues that we're seeing in regards to traffic congestion, because we're in a small geographic area. So you can move a lot of people, and you coming from New York, you understand that you can move a lot of people around this community with mass transit if it's done right. I just think they're going to need the resources to be able to do that. And I think I shared this with you the other when we were in the forum not too long ago about one of my experiences in Los Angeles,
yes, yeah.
Which of course I know is not public transportation, but you know the different forms of transportation I think that are going to be coming to us in the coming years. I took a Waymo, which is a driverless car, which I was absolutely blown away by it, and was kind of scared to get into to begin with, but it was an incredible journey, and I could see where somebody could bring in 10, 15, 20 cars and just have them running through this community where you could possibly tie it into some public transportation authority like that. I know the transit authority has been talking about some of that over time, and I think it's going to be something of the future, but I think we could do a much better job, and it just depends on if the elected leaders within the city and county are willing to put more money into it. I'm willing to put more money into it. I think it's that important to us. The university is the fastest growing part of the public transportation system, and you know you can't get a parking pass onto the campus if you're within a mile radius of the campus. So that public transportation system using WAVE, I think they call it the Seahawk Shuttle, is the portion of WAVE that is growing the most. The kids are using it. They're getting in and on and off that campus using that public transportation. I think we could do so much more than we're currently doing. But I think it's got to be effective. It's got to be efficient. It's got to be something that people feel, I can get onto this bus, I can go downtown, I can come out and do my thing.
So my last question for you is, as mayor, you know, you have a certain status above and beyond council members, although, you know, on paper you're a council member with the gavel.
Yeah, I'm a council member.
But there's something extra about being the mayor, and I'm just curious what you would like to do over the next 2 years if reelected with the mayor's office, with that just something extra.
I think there's a significant amount of goals and objectives that the city has. I mean, I think in the coming year, one of the things that we're going to be talking about is our capital improvement projects. We got roads, bridges, we got a lot of infrastructure, aging infrastructure that we also need to fix and we also need to take care of. I think that was something that we kind of put off. I think we're going to have to reprioritize what our wish list is because the list is enormous. I mean, it's over 200 some million dollars and growing every single day. So that's one side of it because I think public infrastructure is critically important to any community. And if you let it fall apart, it's like that old frame commercial, you can pay me now, pay me later, but right. At some point in time, you're going to pay me. I think that's critically important, and I think we need to focus a lot of our attention in the coming year to that because I know that was one of the top priorities, hopefully going into this next council, is to look at a lot of that. I think there's going to be some tremendous opportunities, especially up on the north end, on selling a lot of the property that we have up there. We've had a pretty good success in what we have sold so far. I think we really need to think about that end of downtown because there is a little bit of a disconnect. There's more residential up there, and not as many people move up to that end of town. I think we would like to spread that out a little bit. But I think we really need to have an overall plan as to what we would like to see up there. I know that we were trying to work out a deal with Roger Perry and his company that did the Riverview apartment building here. River Place, I'm sorry. We need something that's going to be something of an attraction, something that people want to go to. I know that we've got the amphitheater up there, and, of course, that does great, But after the concerts are done and people move out of there, there's really not much else to do. So most people move back up here to the Central Business District. I think that's an opportunity there and what we can do there. I think the expansion of the trail system, the possibility of looking at another transportation bond in the future, I think is critically important. I think we've had a lot of demands for what can we do for the expansion of roadways. Counties don't build roads, as we know in the state. The state of North Carolina is only going to build but so many roads. We're going to have a big debate about the bridge in regards. I know that toll, no toll. It looks more and more like they're going to toll it, but what does that do to Third Street? What does it do to the community? I think there's going to be a lot of challenges there. I think that we've got some economic development groups that are looking to Wilmington to bring in some additional jobs, and what are we going to do as a community? Maybe some of it is going to reside in the cities, maybe not. I think we're going to have a huge debate. We're going to still have a big debate. And we should on the Gen X. That this is not going away. You know, the EPA regs have been rolled back, and you know it's costing this community every time they have to take those filters out of that infiltration system about $4 to $5 million.
Oh yeah.
And so we've spent as a community $45 million. Where are we with that? How are we going to do with that? We have to continue to be at the table on that. And I think lastly, I think the tree issue. I think that people have said to me over and over again, what are you going to do about the protection of trees, bringing in more trees? What are we going to do? I will share with you that when we changed the tree ordinance and we made the calipers bigger or smaller, I'm sorry, to preserve, that has translated about $1.2 million of tree mitigation funds that we have received from developers that have given it to the city. Now, the city has a responsibility to take that $1.2 million and hopefully within the next couple of weeks or months, we'll have about $1.4 million in there. What are we going to do in regards to getting that money back onto the street, get those trees replanted, especially in public right-of-ways and public spaces that I think a lot of people have asked for, and rebuilding that tree canopy? Before Florence, we were at 48%. After Florence, it went down to 41%. Some of that was due to, of course, the massive amount of trees we lost during the hurricane, but obviously some of it was due to the loss because of development. Now, the community said to us loud and clear a couple of years ago, we want y'all to do more to protect trees, and we have done that. But I think that we have an opportunity to put a lot of more trees back into the public realm if we take that tree mitigation fund and put it back out there, in addition to the private sector or nonprofits that are out there that are raising funding for it. Also, in addition to trying to work with developers with tree spades to where we can move more of the trees around on the development as opposed to having to cut them down, because they save money by doing that and giving them the opportunity to do that, but also maybe using some of the tree mitigation funds to be able to move some of those trees into some of the public spaces and not lose them. Because I think if we can share with the community that's what we're trying to do, I think they're much more palatable. I'm not saying they're going to like it, but they're much more palatable than if we don't. And I'll give you a good example. When we were about to lose those six big oak trees on Independence Boulevard.
Because of the turn lane.
That's right. And the TIA triggered the turn lane there at Barclay Point. We as a community took those trees, saved them, preserved them, and moved them. I mean, it was a significant cost, but we did it because we didn't want to cut them down. It's unfortunate what happened on Riceville Avenue, and I know that we tried to save those trees, or I believe the Johnson family tried to save those particular trees, but I understood that they had wrapped around a gas line down there, and then the state made them put a deacceleration lane. Of course, that was the city, the state, as well as the MPO that made that recommendation. And that's unfortunate because I felt that we worked with Jeff Kettner at the time to preserve those trees, even though he'd been given permission from the DOT to cut those trees down. It was a shame to see them being cut the way they were. I think we could have did a much better job in explaining that to the community than that for them to have just cut them down and not have an explanation. And of course, people got very upset about it, and rightfully so. I got upset when I heard about it, didn't even know that they were coming down. But if I'd have known that, I think we should have stopped and said, hey, guys, we need to explain what is going on and what you're going to replant them with and how you're going to do this. And they have to be explained.
All right. Well, I think we've covered a lot. Mm-hmm. I appreciate your time. Last couple of minutes. Anything else you would want to add?
It's just been an honor to serve as the mayor of this great city. You know, this is where I was born and raised and never wanted to move, as I said earlier. This community embraced my immigrant family that came here from a different country. And we've been able to prosper as a family and have done well. But we've also had a responsibility, all of us, all of my brothers and sisters, to give back in some way, shape, or form in regards to public service. So it's been an honor to be able to serve this community. And hopefully I've done a good job, and hopefully people in this community will vote me in again.
All right. Well, Bill Saffo running for re-election for mayor of the city of Wilmington. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Ben.
That was our interview with Democratic incumbent Bill Saffo, who is running for re-election as mayor of Wilmington. I'm Ben Shockman. Thanks for listening to this special edition of The Newsroom. And check out our other candidate interviews at whqr.org or wherever you get The Newsroom as a podcast.